Game over!
Game over!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
So serious.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this week's extra film segment for October 31st, 2019. I'm Ryan McQuaid.
And I'm Jay Ledbetter.
Thanks for coming back to the show, guys. For those of you not familiar with extra film, this is something we do every Friday, where we get together and we talk about the small films, the indies, or the classics that we normally don't have time for on the main show. And on this week's show, Jay, we will be discussing two comedies with Dolomite Is My Name, and in the back half of the episode, Greener Grass. It feels so great to be back on extra film. I want to first say happy Halloween to everyone. Happy Halloween to my co-host, Mr. Jay Ledbetter, the ghost himself. And I want to say a special thanks to Brendan Casty for coming on the show and filling in during my absence while I was on my vacation. I'm well rested and I'm ready to go. And I'm extremely excited to talk to my co-host, who I feel like I haven't talked to consistently for a long time. So I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. And it's great to hear the vocal sounds of Jay Ledbetter. Jay, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. I'm really glad that you got to have a vacation. For me personally, when you love the podcast as much as I do, you don't ever need a vacation. So
wow.
Keep that in mind. I'm really, really glad that you got to have a little R&R, but I'm happy you're back as always. Brendan did a fantastic job of filling in and really embracing the idiocy of extra film. So I really appreciated everything that he did on our episode, despite the fact that I did not like either of those movies. So hopefully that will be changing with this week's crop of films.
Yes, I listened to the show. First of all, Jay, great job hosting. Usually I am the one that is the master of ceremonies around here, and you did a good job. Your transition, though, was, like I told you in text messages, was not that great, but I thought Brendan's...
I haven't had really a great good. One in a while. I'm hoping. I don't know. We'll see this week. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, who knows?
The audience know that I do not think about those beforehand. I do them immediately as I'm thinking of them. As I'm talking, I think of them. So give me a little slack.
Well, whatever makes you sleep at night, my friend. Anyway, but I thought Brendan did a great job. And I thought that the films that you guys discuss were a lot of fun. I mean, they would be more for like a Halloween episode like this one is.
This episode will be releasing after Halloween. The last one was the Halloween Zombie Spooktacular, Ryan.
No. We're recording on Halloween, my friend. So this is technically the Halloween episode, regardless of if it's coming out on November 1st or not. This is the Halloween episode. And the weird thing about Halloween this year, Jay, is that it's like in the middle of the week, so it's kind of hard to celebrate it if you celebrate it before or you celebrate it after. Next year, it's on a Saturday, so there won't be...
The real Halloween celebration, and for that reason, last week was the Halloween Zombie Spooktacular of extra film.
All right, okay. I'm not going to argue with you. I'll just save that for our discussion of these two films that I'm really excited to talk to you about. And why beat around the bush anymore, Jay? Without further ado, let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast extra film segment. Jay, we want this episode to be raw. Tell it like it is on the streets.
See, I just don't know if I'm qualified to do that because I'm just one of the people on the street.
We want this thing to be raw.
Tell it like it is on the streets.
Yeah, lots of pimps and whores and cussing. And kung fu and karate. Brothers love all that kung fu and karate.
Do you know karate?
No, but I'm a fast learner. I can learn how to chop me a mother. Yeah, yeah, huh, yeah. You know what we should have? A all-girl kung fu army.
You know, there's plenty of story opportunity, Rudy. Across this nation, inner cities are being plagued by violent crime. I feel the government hasn't stepped up.
That's it. It's White's fault. The mayor's corrupt, and there's an exorcism.
God damn it, an exorcism?
Yeah, you know all that whole mother's in hell.
I don't know how that fits into our urban motif.
And that was a clip from Dolomite Is My Name, the newest film from director Craig Brewer, and it stars Eddie Murphy, Divine Joy Randolph, Keegan-Michael Key, Mike Epps, Titus Burgess, Craig Robinson, and of course, Wesley Snipes. The film is about Rudy Ray Moore, a comedian and rap pioneer who proved naysayers wrong when his hilarious, obscene, kung fu fighting alter ego Dolomite became a 1970s blaxploitation phenomenon. Jay, this has been a year of Netflix, I would say, and this film is one of the first awards movies we're going to start getting from Netflix this Oscar season. This is one that a lot of people have seen at various festivals. They've been talking about it as a comeback vehicle for Eddie Murphy, and also talking about it as one of the best comedies of the year. So, Jay, with all that said, I'm going to ask you a couple questions here. What do you think of Eddie Murphy as a comedian, performer, entertainer? What do you think of him pretty much as an actor throughout your lifetime? And what did you think of Dolomite Is My Name?
Well, I mean, obviously Eddie Murphy peaked with Donkey and Shrek. You know, I mean, when you have a performance that legendary, I completely understand why you just go ahead and semi-retire from then on. So much respect to Eddie Murphy. He's, you know, obviously he was, I don't think people even our age understand just how huge of a star he was in the 80s. He was the biggest movie star in the world, maybe. I mean, it was like him and Arnold Schwarzenegger on like different ends of the
spectrum.
Film world spectrum. Mm-hmm. They were... You know, they were the two guys. Eddie Murphy was getting like as much money as anybody to make a movie. Beverly Hills Cop was a sensation. It was like you made movies that starred Eddie Murphy and it was guaranteed to make money. Like,
yeah, he also,
he's the guy on the poster. He's the only guy on so many of these posters, like Beverly Hills Cop, Coming to America, Dr. Doolittle, the Nutty Professor, stuff like that. You know, like Trading Places was a really massive hit. 48 Hours is a nice little buddy cop kind of subversive movie, which I actually wish he did more movies like that, where he got to show a little darkness. And that's one of the things about Eddie Murphy that I found to be a little disappointing, is that he never really stretched himself after his 80s heyday. He took, you know, cash roles like Dr. Doolittle, Dr. Doolittle 2. I don't think there's anything on the page of Dr. Doolittle that screams like, oh, this is something that will define my legacy. I don't know that he has a movie that defines his legacy. I don't know that he's made, in my opinion, like a truly great film.
Not a Dreamgirls fan?
Dreamgirls is, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't define it as great. I wouldn't even put it in probably his top five. I think he's made some very, very good movies. Dreamgirls is one of them, I think, but you know, Beverly Hills Cop, I think, is very, very good. He's had some smaller parts in some movies that I really like, but
yeah, Coming to America, when you look at, you know,
but when you look at kind of later Eddie Murphy, you have things like Norbit and the Nutty Professor sequel, Meet Dave, a famous disaster of a movie. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, a lot of these gigantic stars get into this mode that I hate, which is just like, why did you make this movie? Oh, because I'm the guy. Like, it's an Eddie Murphy movie. Oh, because it's a Meryl Streep movie. Because it's a Will Smith movie. We talked about Will Smith last time you were on the show, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's like, those guys only make movies if they're the only thing that matters in the movie. And that's what Eddie Murphy has been about throughout pretty much the entirety of his career, except for something like Shrek, where he is the playing second fiddle, but also probably making more money than any movie he's ever made in his career. So he likes money, which I respect. You know, he made a studio in his house for the Shrek movies because that's how little he cared about them. He recorded those. He recorded that performance in his home. So, you know what? Respect to Eddie Murphy for that. And you know what? If I had to guess, he made DreamWorks pay for that studio as well, would be my assumption. But who knows? I don't know. You know, I mean, Mushu, obviously, legend. We truly stand a legend with Mushu. But you just go down his filmography, and it's underwhelming, I think. Mm. And he's obviously been kind of out of the spotlight for a while. He was barely on Saturday Night Live for a skit for their, like, big, whatever it was, 40th anniversary,
I think it was. Weird because it was like Chris Rock introducing him because, I mean, Eddie Murphy saved Saturday Night Live. Like, way back when, if it wasn't for Eddie Murphy, we might not have Saturday Night Live.
But they had a bad breakup, too.
Yeah, and then it was a bad breakup, but then they brought him back, and he didn't do any stand-up. He wouldn't do any of the skits. He just was, like, taking his applause, and then he just, like, okay, go to commercial. And it was really weird. Like, it was a weird way to celebrate arguably the best comedian to come out of there.
Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah. And so... Yeah,
and that's how it's felt with him in the entertainment industry in general. It's just like, mm-hmm. I am kind of past this. I don't like the grind. I don't like the way that people judge me. I just don't know if this is for me anymore. And I will say, I think what brought him out is his admiration for Rudy Ray Moore, who is mm-hmm. this extremely vulgar comic from the 1970s. And Eddie Murphy, if you have watched his 1980s comedy specials, holy moly, he would be,
well, would you say that they are
hot water?
Would you say, Jay, that they are raw?
You know what? I would say that they are, in fact, Eddie Murphy's raw.
Yeah. So and, a little delirious.
They make me a little delirious mm-hmm. when I listen to them because I can't believe they exist mm-hmm. and that they're still readily available to the public because they are a lot. Yes. They are a lot. Eddie Murphy's stand-up is crazy when you go back and listen to it. He's just throwing everything at the wall, good, bad, and the ugly, and seeing what sticks. And for America at that time, boy, did it ever stick because he, again, was an absolute icon. He remains an icon. And this movie was the thing that brought him back into the world of cinema. Mm-hmm. And for that, I am, in fact, extremely grateful. I think when he really wants to be, he is a magnetic screen presence. And mm-hmm. and he's always been that way. Even in bad movies, he is able to keep them, for the most part, afloat just because of his natural charisma. And in this movie, which I do not think is a great movie. Again, I still don't think that Eddie Murphy has been in a true, like, classic of cinema. This is from Scott Alexander and Larry Kazuski, the writers who are, like, they're kind of the kings of the biopic. They made, like, Ed Wood. They made Man on the Moon, People versus Larry Flint, Big Eyes. They write these kind of interesting biopic movies that are not as straightforward as your typical biopic. Ed Wood is an absolute masterpiece. And this is very much in the vein of Ed Wood. It does not reach the heights of that movie because I think it has a much more straightforward approach than that one, where they try a lot to just kind of replicate the things that made his old movies so interesting. And the performance of Eddie Murphy is the thing that makes this as compelling as it is, because I cannot understate how good I think Eddie Murphy is in this movie. It's absolutely one of the best performances of the year, bar none. Without him in this movie, I honestly think this movie might be pretty forgettable. Mm-hmm. But I have to commend Eddie Murphy for being just truly next level great. I will be considering him at the end of the year when we talk about the In Session Film Awards and all that stuff. Because in a movie that is mostly, honestly, kind of boilerplate, it plays a little bit. It definitely has a more deft touch than a lot of the other biopics that you'll watch. But, I mean, Craig Brewer, the director, is, you just look at his history. He's made the Footloose remake, Black Snake Moan. He made Hustle and Flow. So he's kind of all over the place with his movies. And I don't think there's anything particularly memorable about the direction of the movie. And because of that, I'm not sure that as a whole, this is a movie that will really sustain over time. But
it is a really, really fun watch while you're watching it. And that, you know, should not be that you have to appreciate that. It's an incredibly fun time while you're watching it.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot to say there, Jay. It's probably the most you've talked in an opening segment in quite some time.
Well, if I could just interrupt you real quick, Ryan.
I echo a lot of what you said about Murphy's performance. I think he is absolutely fantastic. I grew up watching a lot of 80s Eddie Murphy, you know, Beverly Hills Cop, Coming to America, Trading Places, 48 Hours. And I think he's one of the top five comedians that we've ever had. I mean, he is just when he is on, just in a movie or in his stand up or do or even just in television appearances, when he's on, man, it's hard to turn off. And you know, you hear, you know, I've watched interviews with Dave Chappelle and Jerry Seinfeld and Amy Schumer and Chris Rock and all the top of the top comedians of today. You know what I mean? And the number one person they still say is the funniest person in the world is Eddie Murphy. And they said when they talk to him and when they are around him, he is still as sharp. He is still as enigmatic. He is still as energetic. He is still Eddie, the Eddie that you and I grew up with watching other things, the Eddie that had charmed America into becoming the number one comedian in the world, right? And in this movie, he gets to showcase that again, that when he is on, it is scary how funny he can be. And yes, he does take a script that is very conventional and very much, you know, of the typical biopic, but he elevates it to a different stratosphere. And not just him, he surround himself, him and Craig Brewer surround himself with a cast that is fantastic. Keegan-Michael Key, Mike Epps, Craig Robinson, Tyus Burgess.
I gotta say, you know, Keegan-Michael Key, I love Key and Peele. I think Keegan-Michael Key is bad in any performance that isn't like 1,000 level heightened.
See, I don't think that. I think he's really good in the film and works great opposite Eddie Murphy. Because I think everybody here serves the purpose of kind of all the comedians, that is.
I think everybody else in the movie is good, but yeah. I can't
get over Keegan-Michael Key.
I can't get on board with Keegan-Michael Key as a performer.
Oh, well, that to which his own. But I think that he plays well off of Murphy. I think Epps does, Robinson, Burgess. I think, obviously, the true people that shine also along with Murphy is Divine Jordan Randolph, who plays Lady Reed.
She is awesome.
She's fantastic and gives Rudy a sense of like humanity and this person that he brings under his wing, but also feels like there's this relationship there that is built beautifully within the script. Then, of course, Wesley Snipes, who is fantastic in this movie, Jay. You didn't talk about Wesley Snipes yet.
He's great, yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, this is another example of, like, when Wesley Snipes was on his game, this is, like, the, like, we think of Wesley Snipes in, like, the action movies or, like, Blade, right? We don't think of Wesley Snipes as when he was in the buddy cop, you know, or the buddy comedy films.
I mean,
you
know what I mean? White Man Can't Jump,
you know,
I think is in kind of the same vein here.
You know, like he's
like an arrogant.
Yeah. When he was, you know, confident and he was cool and he was funny and he was on top of the world. Obviously, personal reasons set him aside from being on top of the world anymore.
You
know,
you got to pay your taxes. Yeah, you got to pay. I don't know what to tell you.
It's not April, but pay your taxes, kid. But
he filed for an extension.
Yeah. As one would, right? But anyway, I think what Eddie Murphy found here was a vehicle to show the world just how talented he can be. I think working with Craig Brewer, a director that understands how to tap into what Eddie Murphy is doing, because Brewer is actually going to be doing the Coming to America sequel with Eddie Murphy. So if this,
I did not know that.
Yeah. So if this works here like the way it does, that could be a very big surprise and wonderful film if it is delivering the kind of talent and kind of craft that this film is doing. I love the rawness of it. I love its boldness. I love just how much I didn't really know about Rudy Ray Moore and learning the history and how the sheer tenacity to not want to give up without a fight. You know, he talks about in this movie that I've been at basically the bottom my entire life and not taking success as complacency, right? He becomes this overnight sensation by making these comedy albums inside the back of his, and selling them out of the back of his car and making them inside his house. And he's traveling all over the country and he's becoming a big name and he signs with the studio and all this stuff. And then he says, you know what? It's not enough. And he's fighting and fighting and fighting. And he gets his movie made. And even that story is fascinating and interesting, how the movie got made, how it got distributed, the end game for all that. The whole movie is a fascinating study. And yes, it is done by screenwriters that are kind of built for this. But the reason why that their stuff hasn't worked as much since Ed Wood, and why it, I think Dolomite Is My Name is on par with Ed Wood, is because it had a because that had a confident director in Tim Burton, just like I think Brewer is here.
Do not compare early 90s Tim Burton to Craig Brewer.
I'm saying you have to have a confident director to make this style, and you also have to have your leading man deliver a career-defining performance. And Johnny Depp delivered a career-defining performance in Ed Wood.
You got one out of those two.
Just like Eddie Murphy in this movie. It's fantastic from a production standpoint. The costumes by Ruth Carter are fantastic in this movie. And it's one of the best ensembles of the year. I was highly impressed with Dolomite Is My Name.
Yeah, for me, it is an incredibly entertaining movie that I think kind of lacks the heart that a movie like Ed Wood does. And the thing I love about Ed Wood, and this is probably partly because of where Tim Burton was in 1994 when he made that movie, was just like Tim Burton at that point still felt like a complete outsider. Brewer, he's just like
an outsider.
What? How is he an outsider?
I mean, like, he's not a guy that the industry is really taking care of.
He made the Footloose remake.
Well, yeah.
What's more insider sellout than that? Like, that's all you have to say. For the guy that made Hustle and Flow to be like, yeah, that Footloose check is looking pretty fat. I'll go do that. Whereas Tim Burton, despite being extremely successful through probably the 90s, was still this guy who felt very insecure about himself and also was very accepting of people in general. And that's what I love about Ed Wood, is that it is like the most accepting movie I've ever watched in my life. And this movie is kind of that, but it's kind of got this like punk rock sensibility of, look, man, some people like dirty, vulgar humor. And I actually appreciate that. Look, I'm the guy who liked Hellboy. I like my dumpster whoppers. I like my trash every now and then. And that is really what Rudy Ray Moore movies were. And they don't pretend that they're not, in the same way that Ed Wood did not pretend that his movies were not bad. It was just more about the beauty of making the art that you feel passionately about. And Dolomite Is My Name does a lot of the same thing in this movie. But the problem is, I don't think it has the same heart. It doesn't define its characters nearly as well as Ed Wood does. And I kind of hate comparing those movies, but they're going for such similar things, and they're by the same writers. And I think it is very much in the same vein as that movie. And while it is funny and it is highly entertaining, I do not get the same feelings of humanity and empathy and friendship in Dolomite Is My Name for a myriad of reasons. But do you disagree with that?
I disagree with that entirely. I think that this cast is...
There is no Bela Lugosi in Dolomite Is My Name.
Yeah, there is. It's Wesley Snipes who delivers a performance that is completely scene-stealing in every sense. There's no Divine Joy Reid. There's no Divine Joy Reid inside Ed Wood.
And then there is an incredibly human, again, extremely empathetic, touching, heartbreaking performance as Bela Lugosi in that. Like, Wesley Snipes ain't winning an Oscar for that, like Landau did for Bela Lugosi.
Well, he's on short list to be nominated.
I'm not the Oscar expert, but I know that he's not even going to come close to a nomination.
You would be surprised that he is on some people's short list. And just like Eddie Murphy.
Personally, I put my
He could
my
get
wallet no- on the table.
I wouldn't
right
be
now.
Surprised.
You get everything in my wallet if he gets nominated for an Oscar, because that is not happening.
Well, I will say this, is that this movie is going to play well the Golden Globes. You get a Golden Globe nomination, you build off that, Critics' Choice, whatever it may be. We're not talking about that. That's a whole story I can sell you on later down the road. What I will say this is that while Burton and Depp at the time felt like outcasts, right? And that necessarily their careers, they hadn't made, people hadn't taken them to the mainstream yet. Like, people hadn't taken them 100% seriously.
He made Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, he was.
Well, in terms of like Oscar player being like serious, like people were like, oh, it's the Scissorhead guy and it's Edward Scissorhands. You know what I mean? It's not like they were establishment guys. And that movie was their big Oscar play, and it was weird, and it was energetic, and it was different, and they went serious, and it played very well into their hands. And it was probably at that time.
It's not most, that movie is not serious.
Yes, but it is. But not every Oscar movie has to be serious. Case in point, this movie that we're talking about here. What this screenplay from the same writers is doing, and what is interesting about its star and its director. This movie is entirely about second chances. This is entirely about doing the best of what you got and making art out of it. This is a movie that I think that we're unfairly comparing this to Ed Wood. I think that this is a better version of something like The Disaster Artist, right? Because
The Disaster Artist is very much inspired by
Ed
Wood.
Yes, I understand that, but
incredibly influential movie.
Yeah, but that movie's a joke.
Capital MASTERPIECE masterpiece.
Yeah, but that is a joke. That movie is basically, it's,
well, that movie is just about a bunch of buddies getting together and reenacting The Room.
Yeah, that's exactly what that, and that's not what Dolomite Is My Name is doing.
No,
it's not a movie making.
It's a celebration of a man and a type of entertainment
and filmmaking. Yes, in an era and a time period that is extremely lived in and extremely personal, and you feel not just, you know, the weight of Rudy's decisions personally with everyone, but you feel the burden of what he has to go through to make this and how stubborn it is and the fascinating stories and everything coming together and how it's not luck. It's just the determination of when you put yourself out there on the line to make art, to put something out there for everyone to enjoy regardless, because you look at Wesley Snipes' character throughout the entire film, he's going, this movie's going to suck. And that's that optimism that Eddie Murphy shows. He's like, no, everyone here's busting their ass. You could do the same thing. And it is all about, by the end of this film, regardless of, you know, where it all ends up, it's truly fascinating to look at a story here, just like it is with Ed Wood, and how movies that wouldn't necessarily, quote unquote, be what everyone goes to see at the theaters are embraced and celebrated by entertainers now that fully understand the ramifications and the implications of all the decision-making process to get those pieces of entertainment made. And it is truly fascinating to see that, because of the fact that how hard it is right now for a lot of minorities to get roles and then have all minority casts and to have them, you know, be represented in Hollywood in such a non-stereotypical way. And I don't think that anyone in here is very stereotypical. You can see the confidence in every single one of them through, you know, people that you would maybe think that they are, but they're not, because they're so confident. They're different and special in just about every single way. I found the way that each performer played off of one another to be perfect. And that's what makes a great cast. And that's what makes this movie special. Just like I think Ed Wood, unlike The Disaster Artist, is that you have to have confidence in the storytelling you're making. This movie is extremely confident. And it's also extremely hilarious. There's so many
one-liners.
And I know that a lot of it was pulled from Rudy Ray Moore's comedy, but it's not even just like the comedy bits that Eddie Murphy's doing in the stand-up, which proves that how great of a stand-up he is and why he's perfect to play this role. But it's just the dialogue between everyone and the filmmaking and everything surrounding it. It's completely hilarious, but it's also inspiring.
And we need to emphasize how funny this movie is, because it is very, very fun. And Eddie Murphy's delivery of like 25 lines in this movie, I was like, my jaw dropped at how good it was, and his timing and everything like that. He was so committed. And I have to imagine it was because he does look up to Rudy Ray Moore so much. And that was so refreshing to see. It is so nice to see Eddie Murphy give a crap, because he hasn't done that in a very, very long time. And, you know, and like we said, the supporting cast is, you know, almost as good as Murphy is, and Murphy's incredible. I really am excited to do the exercise of the best male performances of the year, because I think this is a pretty stacked year. So for Eddie Murphy to be up there, and I think he's like a guaranteed like nominee level performance here at the very least. But Ryan, it sounds like you love this movie. Is this like a top 10 of the year for you level?
It's pretty close. It's borderline right up there. I enjoyed it, and I didn't expect to really, you know, love it as much as I did. I just think that, you know, maybe it's this, that I'm very forgiving, because I think a lot of the movies that come out nowadays, not everything's really funny, and we don't get a lot of great comedies. And this thing just, it's snapping and it's slapping and it's working, and it's so goddamn confident and funny and memorable. And yes, it plays on tropes and, you know, the certain biopic things that we see, but through its humor and its humanity, it elevates to a stratosphere that I haven't seen in a while. And I don't think it's fair maybe to compare it to Ed Wood, like I said, because I think that they, while both are funny and both are telling kind of the same, you know, kind of backlighting of how a movie is made, I think they're serving different purposes. And I think that they are different films and set in different eras for different casts and a different way of doing it. I mean, that's a black and white movie. This is obviously a movie full of color, not just, you know, from the costumes, but from the actors themselves, and telling a story about people that don't get stories told about. And I think in a lot of ways too, this is what I loved about BlacKkKlansman last year. And I know that movie takes more gets more serious, and there are moments of severity in this movie.
Also,
as
a
well.
Very funny. Well, BlacKkKlansman is a very funny movie.
Yeah, it is. It is a funny movie, and that's.
I would almost call that a comedy.
Yeah, I think it's more comedy at times, and it's more, you know, biting satire, I guess. I don't want to get into that semantics of that or what a satire is. You know, it's been spewed around a lot lately, but I think that those are just movies that, like, we need right now. We need some good, honest, fun time at the movies, and not everything be so damn serious. And I embrace that a little bit more. And maybe that's just me, but when it's done at this kind of confident level, I am drawn to it like a moth in a flame, I guess. But Jay, I want to get to some final thoughts here for you on Dolomite Is My Name. And what might those be, my friend?
I think the biggest takeaway for me, I've kind of been, you know, this will happen every now and then where you love a movie so much and I'm just like, I like it, but don't love it. Mm-hmm. And it makes it sound like I'm really, really negative. I need to emphasize just how much fun I had watching this movie, because it is so, so enjoyable on a scene by scene basis. As you're watching it, the time flies by. Eddie Murphy is so funny in this movie. Wesley Snipes, like, he's not going to get nominated for an Oscar. I'm sorry, but his performance is really, really great here. He's so funny and dry, and he's only in it in little spurts. They pepper him in a little bit, but, you know,
I think if he had more, it would be too much. And I think
that's very possible. Well, he's like, the whole point of his character is that he's barely there. I mean, that's, yeah, that's kind of the whole joke, yeah, is that he's never there. So on that level, it totally works thematically for his character and thematically for the movie. It's just like, oh, anybody who's mildly influential in the entertainment world does not care about this. And it's cool to see a person like Rudy Ray Moore be represented. I knew very, very little of him outside of just his name. And, you know, kind of like, he's like the vulgar comic, and seeing him on screen here, where he in this film is so full of love and joy and respect of the people around him, even as he is spewing off this very sarcastic, kind of angry humor, extremely vulgar. And I appreciated them not straying away from the vulgarity. I will say that it is very much humor of an era. And it is something that really played to a specific crowd who was not as interested in kind of the highbrow hoity toity world of a lot of the other comedy of the time. Like they didn't want Cliff Huxtable or whatever, Bill Cosby. This was kind of the answer to Bill Cosby, was Rudy Ray Moore, who was like, look, this is not how people are. People are vulgar and crass, and they bust each other's chops and all that stuff. And he really connected with a large swath of people. And I really appreciate when a movie narrows its view down to a very specific group of people who are normally not represented on screen. And so for that reason, look, it's totally worth watching. You'll love it while you're watching it. I just wish there was a little more that I really grasped onto and would remember, because I'm not sure that this is going to really stand the test of time, despite the fact that it is very, very fun.
Well, as for my final thoughts, I think this is an absolute crowd pleaser. And I think that this one where I don't think you could have the whole family watch it because of the vulgarity, but it is one where if you were with your parents and you're just, you know, you wanted to watch a really good comedy, you know, I told my father-in-law about it, and he actually remembers Rudy Ray Moore. He owned albums of him, and he watched it, and he loved it so much that he showed my mother-in-law, and then they showed people in the family, and it just has kind of spread, you know, throughout my family, and everyone I hear back from, they say they love it. And I think that that's great, because like I said, we don't have a lot of great comedies out there. And you guys did two comedies last week and you didn't like those movies, you know, and it's hard to make them these days and have them be confident, have them be stylish, and have them have their own voice, and have them, you know, say something more than just an average comedy. And that's what I loved about this movie, is that it's something more than just a good laugh out loud time. And that leads me to what you were saying, and I'll echo this as well, is that, man, Eddie Murphy is just so damn good in this movie. And you're right, Jay. I would put him right up there right now. If we were doing our best of the year right now, he would definitely be in consideration. This is the best performance of his entire career. And it's
that might be true. Yeah.
One where I think he's just working on all cylinders. He's, I think, bringing his comedic chops from the past with his more dramatic chops from, like,
and he's trying not to just be Eddie Murphy.
No, he's not doing kind of like, I think, what Will Smith is trying to do, where he's trying to catch that old magic back. I think he's just trying to be honest to himself, be the best version of Eddie.
He's playing a character. Yeah,
he's actually taking the time to make something good, you know, and working with this screenplay and working with Craig Brewer. And he obviously loved that so much that he's going to make another project with him, and maybe both of them can carry the success on for the Coming to America sequel that he's taken so many years to try to make. And I just hope that Dolemite Is My Name is a new, exciting chapter for Eddie Murphy, and not just a blimp on the radar to Sequelville or Bad Ideaville, you know, that he's had a lot throughout his career. I hope this can bring
him. Oh, you mean like Coming to America 2?
Well, I mean, it depends on what they're going to do with it. I mean, Coming to America 1 is an absolute classic. You know, and I'm not a big fan of comedy sequels in general, but if Brewer and Murphy can capture the magic that they made with this movie,
your respect or your adoration for Brewer in this is just blowing my mind.
It's a respect when you make a quality film and you get a quality, excellent performance out of Eddie Murphy. And Eddie Murphy does not like to work with a lot of people. And if he wants to work with Brewer, and it's someone that he, you know, that property has been sitting there for a long time, and he feels confident in him, and he feels confident in another. And I know this sounds crazy and weird, but it's, you know, sometimes an actor finds that person and they can build off of it, or they could not. I mean, I look at it a lot, and I'm not comparing them. So just in terms of like quality or anything, but it's terms of, look at what Tom Cruise found late in his career with Christopher McQuarrie. He found somebody that knows his sensibilities, can be a good collaborator, and they've made really good movies together. I hope
that's actually a good comparison. Maybe they can. I mean, we don't know that that's going to happen yet, but that's the ideal situation of where this goes. Yeah.
And by the end of this film, I want to root for Eddie Murphy again. You know what I mean? Just kind of like, I know everybody wasn't a big Gemini Man fan, and I know I was probably more positive than a lot of other people. I want Will Smith to be successful. I want our movie stars to do well. It's kind of like, you know, we want certain teams to do well.
I want him to try stuff. I want him to try stuff. Which is what this movie is, I think.
Yeah. Mm. And so if they think they've got the confidence to build off of this and create something special, even with a sequel from way back when, I mean, movies and reboots get made all the time. I mean, there's another damn Terminator movie coming out. So, I mean, take it with a grain of salt. I could be wrong. I hope I'm not, because I want him to continue to make funny things and make us laugh and bring some more joy into the world. And that's exactly.
Let's hope it doesn't end up being a dark fate for him.
Oh, yeah. I just don't want that. I know that JD has seen Dolomite Is My Name, and you can see a lot of his reactions over there at our Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/incessionfilm. And I believe we will have a review coming up to the website sooner rather than later.
And if you agree or disagree with our takes, you can let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or you can leave us an email at incessionfilm@gmail.com.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and coming up on the other side, we will be discussing Greener Grass. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
On each episode, myself, along with a great guest, we will discuss in detail an iconic scene from a classic movie. So come check us out. We are available on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and most other places you can find podcasts. We are also on Facebook, just type in Cinema Recall, and we are also on Twitter at @cinema_recall. We hope you enjoy the show, and thank you for listening.
Hello, Incession Film Podcast listeners. We take a moment to interrupt this daily programming to bring you the Next Best Picture podcast, run by myself, Matt Neglia, where Michael Schwartz, Will Matheny, Dan Chiesese, Ryan C. Showers, and a slew of others, we are all on a search to find what is going to be the Next Best Picture winner at the Oscars. Join us on our journey as we look at foreign films, documentaries, independent movies, as well as big action blockbusters. Everyone is a contender until they are not. Be sure to listen to us on all of the podcasting networks, including iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and on CastBox. Be sure to come check us out on nextbestpicture.com, where we also have movie reviews, weekly polls, the before-mentioned podcast, as well as a lot more content revolving around the award season. Thank you so much for listening to me ramble. Now, back to JD and Brandon.
You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Ryan, are you a dog now?
Damn right, baby. Ho, ho!
Okay, Dennis, take a step to your left. Bob, let's see that smile.
Don't you talk about my facelift!
He doesn't smile anymore.
Oh, I'm losing Twilson. If you could just rotate him forward from perfect.
You're here first.
I'm never first.
What is he doing?
Julian, are you a dog now?
It's him.
Oh, Julian, you need your glasses to see the board.
I miss Julian. I have Julian here. He's a dog now.
Hi, Julian.
Raja, you can play with Julian at recess.
So fast. It's incredible.
That's who you were meant to be. My son.
Julian's not invited back to Rocket Math.
Did you think he was going to become an accountant?
Wait a second. Wrong husband.
What's he doing? Lisa, you kiss like your friend.
She's so cute.
Lisa, do you want her?
Are you sure?
Take her. She's yours.
That was a clip from Greener Grass, a film from Jocelyn DeBoer and Don Luby. The film stars Jocelyn DeBoer and Don Luby, along with Beck Bennett, Neil Casey, and Mary Holland. This is a movie that we kind of last minute decided to review. We had other plans, and some stuff wasn't really available for one of us or both of us that we might want to review. And this one came in at the last second as something I recommended to Ryan. I said, this looks weird. It got good reviews, weird comedy. We can check it out. And let me just tell you, it's a weird one. It's a weird one, and you probably figured that out just from the clip of the trailer that we just played for you. Very influenced by the world of Adult Swim, very influenced by the world of David Lynch. It's a bizarro, weird, totally out there comedy. So, Ryan, I gotta ask you, did this one make you feel like the grass was pretty green in your backyard, or did you want to jump over the fence to the other side?
That was not very good, Jay.
I went on vacation. Would do again.
And this is what you give me?
True masterpiece.
I give it a good old D plus, which is nicer.
High praise.
Which is nicer than what I'm going to give this movie. Jay, the dictionary defines stupid as having or showing a great lack of intelligence or common sense. Which would be a wonderful definition to describe Greener Grass. I put this thing on, not
so you liked it.
What the hell this thing was going to be.
This was a Jay suggestion. This was a Jay's choice.
This is your fault. So no talkie, Ulysses, because you made me do this. You made me watch this.
Ulysses?
Ulysses. You're listening to me, right?
Ulysses?
Yeah, Ulysses. Uh-huh. Ulysses to me, all right? This is a horrible movie. Stupid. Dumb. One of the worst films I think In Session Film has ever reviewed. I'm not just talking about before they decided to invite us on this show to do. And we've been doing a lot of films on In Session Film and a lot of films for Extra Film. This is the worst one in our entire podcast history. It is not funny. It's just completely makes no sense. It revels in its absurdity, and there's no point to it. It is an hour, 35 minutes of the same damn joke over and over again till it beats you upside the head of, yeah, this generation, the way people raise their kids is dumb and stupid. Oh, suburbia, let's have a critique about that. Oh, yeah. I would rather watch Gaspar Noé's Climax than ever watch Greener Grass again.
All right. Well, that's been a great episode, folks. We'll see you next time.
Nope. I'm not done.
Oh. All right. Fine.
I think that the filmmakers here who premiered this at South by Southwest should have taken this back to the studio and apologized for what they made. You have lambasted Saturday Night Live, which has a couple of cast members and people that have worked there in this movie. This is the kind of crap writing that has made Saturday Night Live bad in your estimation. And yet you're going to sit here on this podcast and you're going to try to tell me how good this movie is when in all actuality, it is a bag of horse crap that people should not watch.
I haven't said anything yet. I don't know what you're
doing. Go to his letterbox and you'll see. Pause and go to letterbox and you'll see, and then unpause it. You'll see that this movie
is really breaking the fourth wall here.
And I am so angry at you that you made me watch this. And JD, there's no more irresponsible thing that you have allowed than allowing Jay to pick a movie for this podcast. It will never happen again, listeners. Never should it happen again, because I will use this card till the end of my days to never have to watch this mess again. I at times watching this movie, thought to myself, have I truly done something to offend you as a friend, as a podcast host, as a fellow In Session film person? Have I done that? Because in all actuality, this is torture. I feel like this is exactly what torture must feel like, to watch this incessant drivel for an hour and 35 minutes that felt like longer than probably what The Irishman's runtime is. This is awful, and you should be ashamed of yourself, Jay Leno. Oh, not today, ashamed of yourself.
Oh, I really went in there. I liked it. I think it's a funny movie.
No, and
I think
it's very not funny. Much worth your time. Nothing's funny about this movie.
I think it's a very funny movie. It's a gag a minute type of movie. If you're into the Adult Swim type of humor, I think you'll really be into it. It's a bunch of like loosely connect. Well, they're actually, I think they're thematically very connected skits I think are on their own very, very funny. Look, if you didn't think the gag where the little kid turned into a golden retriever was funny, stupid, then like I get it. You won't like it. I thought it was hysterical, and everyone plays it so straight and so well. And Beck Bennett, I've always been such a huge fan of him from his like YouTube days. He was in a YouTube comedy troupe called Good Neighbor Stuff with Kyle Mooney, and they make this really surreal type of content. And they're both on Saturday Night Live. You talked about how some of the guys on this are on SNL, and Beck Bennett is one of those guys, and he is the driving force behind the weirdest stuff that gets on SNL that a lot of people don't like, but I think is the best stuff that
they're doing. It works for 3 minutes. It doesn't work for an hour and a half.
Oh, I think it does. And I'm going to be the one who's like really talking up this movie as something special. I need to let it be known that I like this less than Dolomite Is My Name, even though I will be the one defending this vehemently, because I do think it. I laughed so much at this movie. I think it really overstays its welcome. I agree with you there. It does not need to be an hour 35. There's this serial killer plot thread that goes absolutely nowhere. And I think one of the biggest disconnects that you have with this movie compared to me is I adore David Lynch and you do not. I think David Lynch's surrealism often revolves around the suburbs being a source of extreme horror. And that's what this is. It's disturbing imagery, weird, awkward, tense situations in this seemingly idealistic situation, which is, you know, the perfect metaphor for that is the everyone has braces, where everyone is trying to look their best in the long run. And I thought that was actually a pretty clever metaphor and actually made for some really solid imagery throughout the entirety of the movie. And it's just full of really funny little moments, like where they accidentally swapped husbands, make out, and then realize that they swapped the husbands. And then there's like
hilarious.
This lady just gives away her baby. It's really hilarious. Funny. The bits are extremely funny if you're on the movie's wavelength. And if you're not on the movie's wavelength, I'll just say you're more normal than I am, because it is really out there. It's really strange stuff. And I'm glad I watched it. And honestly, after your diatribe, Ryan, I'm really glad that I made you watch it.
No, that's sick. That's the sickest thing that you've said on this podcast, that you're glad that I watched this movie. You should be ashamed.
I got it. I got it. Just a kick out of your opening statements.
I honestly don't have anything.
Do you think of Adult Swim type stuff?
Sure. Because some things on there work and some of them don't.
Do you
have
experience? Like, do you like Tim and Eric?
Yes.
Well, this is very much Tim and Eric stuff here.
And that stuff to me, sometimes it's very funny and sometimes it's not. Comedy is in the eye of the beholder. And what I'm looking at here is a steaming pile of horse crap. That's exactly what this movie is.
Have you watched Too Many Cooks?
No. Because okay, I go to go bed at a recent hour.
It's an incredible.
Not watching.
Well, it's on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
It doesn't matter. It's an extremely popular video. This is bad. It's bad cinema.
It's like
cinema.
12 minutes.
This premiered at Sundance. It also screened at South by Southwest.
Great reviews.
So I heard nothing about this at that festival, But, you know, sometimes it slips through the cracks, right? There's a lot of movies going on.
It's an extremely small movie. It's a lot of things happening. This has to have the marketing budget of, like,
you know,
my postcard that I sent the other
day. You just go and you say, okay, well, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, well, IFC Midnight picked it up, so you're probably looking for, like, a little surprise hit. I didn't hear a lot of it when I was at the festival, but I was like, you know what? If it premiered at a festival like that, it's got to be either pretty good or at least middle of the road. It can't be one of the most pointless things in the world. And I feel bad for everybody here. Like, Beck Bennett, you know, should ask them to take his name off of posters and credits for this thing. that he should just go back to Saturday Night Live and collect a paycheck and never talk about this. You know, him and Kyle Mooney, they do create great things. You know, Kyle Mooney created Brigsby Bear a couple of years ago. And that's a really good movie and a really funny comedy. And also
very,
like,
good movie. Yeah.
You know,
really,
just
really good.
A really, you know, really biting sat, you know, just kind of social commentary. This movie has
certainly
none of
some
that.
Surrealist elements, nothing compared to this.
Nothing. Movie, no. Yeah. And it has, like, you know, it's probably a more straightforward movie than this, which is just, you know, let's just continue to do stupid crap for an hour and 35 minutes and call it a movie. That's not a movie. That's just like you all wanted to hang out because you made a short film in 2015 before any of you had a name. And then you all decided, oh, let's do that. Which, by the way, the short film, if I'm not mistaken, was directed by who's the guy that does comedy Bang Bang?
Scott Aukerman.
Yes, he directed that. That makes sense. But you know what? Aukerman's a funny guy. Nothing's funny about this. And it's sad because this is stuff that I want to see. I want to see two female comedians, if you want to call them that, create a film in their own vision and get the financing, you know, and make something completely original.
It was not directed by Scott Aukerman.
It wasn't? Okay.
No.
Who was it? Who did it?
Paul Briganti, who doesn't have much beyond.
Doesn't have much credit. That. I just saw that he had some sort of, didn't he have some sort of involvement in it? Doesn't matter. Semantics whatsoever. Who gives a crap? No one's going to remember this movie, you know, 5 minutes after we're done podcasting it, let alone, you know, while we're talking about it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't care. And then that's the thing. It's none of this movie matters. Nothing of it has substance. Nothing of it has truly any artistic merit whatsoever behind it. It's not funny. It's a comedy, for Christ's sake, and it has no laughing moments. I love comedies. I mean, you know, I'll watch just about anything. And I sat there going, when am I going to laugh? Instead, I felt pain. I felt dread. I felt angry. I felt just completely, like, abandoned by cinema watching this movie. And that is the thing that you can take out of watching this movie, is if you have a cynical way of looking at the world and looking at cinema and looking how independent films get financed, look no further than this movie, because this is why the big studios win. When you make dumb things for dumb reasons and have any explanations, way to back it up as to why it should exist.
Oh, I think it should exist. And I think it is for a very specific audience, certainly, but This is a brand of comedy that a lot of people really, really like. You look at Netflix shows like the show with Tim Robinson. I think you should leave. Is that the name of that show? The sketch show. That's a very, very funny show. You look at something like the Bob Odenkirk and David Cross show, Bob and David, or some with Bob and David, I think the show is called.
Yeah.
This is some really popular stuff. You look at something like Nathan For You. It's kind of along those same lines of this very awkward brand of humor that is sort of,
but those are funny. Those are funny.
Yeah,
this isn't
and
funny.
So is this. It's
no,
funny.
It's
I mean,
not.
There's no arguing what you think is funny or not. That's kind of the crux of this review and why it's really hard to talk about. But I think it is a gag a minute movie, and so much of it made me laugh really, really hard. As a whole, I'm not sure that it is entirely cohesive, and I think the themes they're going for are not entirely original. Again, I think they're really treading on the ground that David Lynch has really ridden over before. It is really an homage to David Lynch with much more of a comedic bent to it, which I'm here for, honestly. Like, I thought it was funny. I liked its cynicism. I think the performances are actually really good.
Oh my God.
And it's got a great dog in it. It's really hard to have a discussion about this movie because it is so focused on making you laugh. It has a singularity to it. that if you didn't think it was funny, then you're going to hate it. And if you laughed a lot, you're going to like it, because there's really not much more that it's trying to accomplish. But with that said, Ryan, I think I've got an idea of how you feel about this movie. So why don't you give me a final thought or two here before we move on?
Final thought? The one thing I will say that was good were the costumes. Of course, they're just completely ripped out of like the Stepford Wives, and those are probably bigger budget films, but the costumes are pretty good in the film. The style that they're going for, which is that homage to that Stepford Wives-esque commentary, looks about right, though I think it's inconsistent at times towards the middle. I think the ending is completely dumb and makes no sense with the whole serial killer thing. You're right. It's completely terrible.
I don't love that part. Yeah.
It has Jim Cummings in it, and we were talking about literally before this review, and I was just like, he's who? Oh, that's right. I don't even remember who he is in this film.
Question,
and
that was, is Jim Cummings annoying on Twitter?
I mean, I'm not going to get into that. I mean, I think he's a great filmmaker, and I think he made a horrible choice here, and I feel sorry for him.
I think he's annoying on Twitter. That's my opinion.
Okay. I don't know what that has to do with this film, but
I'm just throwing it out there. Jim Cummings, big Twitter following. Look, I understand you're a little riled up over here.
Hey, you know what? I'll give you that, Jay. It's random, just like the rest of this movie, so I'll give you that for that thought. I hope that the screenwriters here and directors, they make something down the road that I truly like, something that is accessible and even within this genre. Why does it have to
be accessible? That's what I love about the movie, is that it's not accessible.
Well, you mentioned that it's David Lynch. I mean, if this is anything to what David Lynch is like, then you'll never get me on that bandwagon, my friend. That's beside the point, is that I don't know what accessible would be for them. I don't know if I don't know. I mean, this worked for you, which I mean, I think scares the ever living hell out of me what that means. But I don't know how you would have made a good movie out of this. This feels like a good short film you put up on YouTube and you then create something and move on to the next thing. Maybe they'll get a show and be able to just do little vignettes like that on a show, which I think maybe would work better. Of course, using different scenarios and not the same thing over and over again. I will say that there is one person in this film that did an okay job, and that was Darcy Cannon or Carden, who played Miss Human. There are moments with those little kids that was like a small smile on my face, not even a chuckle, just kind of like a like where you're just like, okay, cool. Anyway, and then the scene ends and you're just like, oh, okay, that's it, okay, cool. I rather have spent an entire movie with Miss Human, because she seemed to be the only human character in the film, and of course she, you know, her name is Miss Human. Oh, how hilarious that is. And so the end of the day, I'll be picking a lot of the movies for the rest of the year, because of the fact that this is horrible, and I'll never forgive you for this, Jay. I'll never forgive you for this.
It is a bummer that I have lost choosing privileges. That's I'll have to reflect on that this week and really kind of decide if that's really how I want to move forward with this podcast. Ryan, I am very sorry that you did not like this movie as much as you
I'm kidding. Didn't obviously like it. He has say in the darn movies that we select. It's going to be really hard trusting that opinion for a long time.
Look, I recommended this movie before I had even seen it. I did think it was more up my alley than your alley, because I do love the Adult Swim style, surrealist, really out there, specific, not for everybody humor. And I knew that's kind of what this was going for. And for you, this was the worst possible version of that, apparently. And for me, I thought it was a good version of that kind of humor. It is unrelenting in its gags. It is unapologetic about how inaccessible it is, which is what I really like about it. It's not a movie I can really recommend to anybody, but it is a movie that I really had a fun time with. I laughed a lot. And I honestly think there's some directorial decisions here that I found very interesting. I think visually, for what I assume the money they had, I think it's a very good looking movie. I think some of the symbolism and imagery that they used was very compelling. and complicated and interesting. And that's something that very few movies have these days. And so I would take this movie trying stuff that is challenging over some movie that plays it safe and kind of connects the dots. And so for that reason, it's one that I enjoyed and one that I think for a certain type of person, I would really urge to go and seek out. If you like the Adult Swim, if you like the Too Many Cooks, the Tim and Eric style stuff, or if you're really familiar with David Lynch's work and really appreciate the kind of stuff that he goes for, I think this is absolutely worth your time. But
no, save the money. Go watch something else.
Again, I wouldn't recommend it to everyone. But if you fall into those categories, yeah. I would recommend
if that's your thing, have at it. Have fun. It's just not for me.
Well, that'll do it for this review, I suppose. But I don't think JD has seen this one yet. We don't have a review up on the site. Again, it's a very, very small movie that we just kind of picked out of a hat, basically. You know what? I'll be honest. And why it happened? I listened to Comedy Bang Bang, and they promoted this movie. And I was like, let's try it out. So it was Scott Aukerman that got me to watch the movie, even if he wasn't involved in the production itself. But it sure does. It does. But this one isn't on Letterboxd, but you can find JD's thoughts on other films on letterboxd.com/insessionfilm.
And if you agree or disagree with our takes, you can let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram page, or you can email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com. And just a friendly reminder before we close this show out completely, that on episode 350 this coming weekend on the main show, they will be discussing Parasite. And instead of another Ingmar Bergman film for the marathon, they are going to be talking about the newest addition to the Terminator franchise, and that is Terminator Dark Fate. And the poll this week, Jay, is tied to the Bong Joon-ho film Parasite, and it is, what is your favorite Bong Joon-ho film? Jay, I actually cannot answer this poll on this week's extra film because
Mr. Hotshot over here,
Brendan, is not going to be on the main show this weekend. I am actually going to be assisting Mr. JD Duran in reviewing Parasite this weekend. Yeah. So Jay, I will kick it to you. I know you have seen Parasite. I have seen Parasite. Will it sway you in this poll or not? What are your thoughts on what is your favorite Bong Joon-ho film?
I admit to having not seen a lot of his Korean, his foreign language output. So
blasphemy. Blasphemy, I say.
I need to go and check out more of it. But, you know, the host, I think, is great. Snowpiercer, I think, is pretty decent. Okja, I like a lot. But for really? Me, having just seen it, I got to go Parasite, I got to say. I'm still very mixed on some parts of it. I think I like it less than most people do, but I think it's my favorite of his movies. I think it's the most complicated. I think it's the most challenging. I think it's a movie that just shifts tones and genres so deftly that it kind of blew my mind as I was watching it. It's really a masterwork from a directorial standpoint. I need to see it again and decide exactly what I think of the messaging and how coherent it is from a storytelling standpoint. But I think just watching it, it just feels like a movie that weighs more than other ones. You know, it's just like, oh wow, this is kind of a master at work, and that's what I thought about Parasite. So I cannot wait to hear what you guys think about it, because again, I think it is such a complex movie that is saying very complex things, and I've been reading a lot on it, listening to a lot of people talk about it, and I value no one's opinions more than yours and JD's and Brendan's, so I can't wait to hear what you have to say about it.
Well, you value my opinion, then you must then agree with what I said about greener grass. Anyway,
not always right. I value it, even if it's something I vehemently disagree with.
I'm just messing with you, my friend. But that's what's going to happen on the main show this coming weekend. Now, as for next week on Extra Film, a little tease for next week, we are actually going to be reviewing two films already that we know about, and that is going to be the Timothy Chalamet vehicle, The King, on Netflix. And we will also be reviewing the Pedro Almodovar, Antonio Banderas vehicle, Pain and Glory. I have seen Pain and Glory. I know Jay hasn't yet. And I am looking forward to The King, kind of the outlaw king of 2019. Jay, I'm kind of excited about next week's show, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the medieval period piece of Netflix's 2019 output, I suppose. And Almodovar's Pain and Glory, I'm really interested in seeing. You know, Banderas has got a little Oscar juice going for him. And Almodovar is an incredibly interesting filmmaker on his own. You know, I mean, regardless of whatever is surrounding the film, just seeing an Almodovar film is incredibly worthwhile. So next week is going to be a really interesting show. You know, we've done two episodes in a row of just pure comedies. And so next week will be a nice little shift.
Yeah, shift to some more serious films, more awards films. It's picking up. Fall's picking up, my friend. So there'll be a lot of interesting choices.
Most wonderful time of the year.
Exactly, for Extra Film next week. But with that, that's going to do it for this week's show. Just a friendly reminder to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And we do try to respond to every email that you guys send our way. And that email, again, is insessionfilm@gmail.com.
And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud. And while you are on iTunes, please leave us a review. We would greatly appreciate it. I check the reviews way, way, way too often. So please write them, and so that I don't feel like a complete lunatic when I look five times and there's been no new ones. Our podcasts are syndicated every week at geekcastradio.com, the Podfix Network, and the Lamb Podcast Network. And you can also check out our Listen Now page at insessionfilm.com/listen-now.
The In Session Film Podcast is supported by our awesome listeners like you. If you want to help us out, you can go over to our website at insessionfilm.com and click on our main menu to find our bonus content tab, Jay. Hit it! To hear our bonus content for just a small donation of 99 cents, you can check out the In Session Film store, or you can go over to insessionfilm.com/donate. You'll see all the information there on how you can help us out. You can also hear all of these amazing shows that we do on our mobile app for a one-time fee of $1.99. You can find our app in the Amazon Market for Android devices, the Windows 10 Phone Store for Windows devices, the Podcast Source app for iOS devices. You can see all those details at insessionfilm.com/apps. All right, Jay, any final thoughts you have before we wrap it up completely?
So this is my first year in a single family home. And so that meant that for this Halloween, we are recording this on Halloween night. Mm-hmm. For the first time ever, we got like a lot of trick-or-treaters and it was really, really fun. But I'm going to introduce for the first time ever a new segment on In Session Film. And I fully expect JD to put some different music behind this, because I think there's really going to be a different vibe here. I speak, of course, of In Session Fashion. Click. It's been an incredible year for fashion on this Halloween night. What are all the tweens and elementary schoolers wearing this year? Well, let me tell you all about it. There's Avengers left and right. Certainly the uniform of this Halloween season. Captain Marvel, Captain America, captains everywhere. But meanwhile, the real captain of fashion is the pop superstar idol. I saw Lady Gaga's, Madonna's. I saw them everywhere, and I was giving them king-size candy bars left and right. So this Halloween season, make sure to put your capes and tighties on, because it's superhero season. Click.
Wow. So what you're saying is she passed out a lot of candy.
I really enjoyed the experience of like Halloween giving. I thought it was really, really fun. It was, you know, bringing joy to other people, Ryan. I like it. I like it a lot. We got the king size candy bars because we want to be like the house that kids want to go to next year. So we were really focused on really doing it up for our first Halloween in a house.
Yeah, no, I live in an apartment no one comes to my house, and it's perfect because I am not a big Halloween guy. I know. I'm usually
between greener grass and Halloween, you're just a real Debbie Downer.
It's one that I'm just like, I'm, I, it's like, okay, you know, I don't eat a lot of candy. I've never really had like the itch for stuff like that. And so like, I think I stopped trick or treating when I was around 10. I respect everybody that does it though. And I and that is the one thing I do miss is that when I was in high school, middle school, I did hand out candy to everyone and to see all their different outfits. And that is the one thing is like, we bought candy and nobody, and we have a lot of kids in the building and stuff and nobody came and it was kind of sad, but I mean, I guess that's more candy for my wife, or, you know, she takes it to work and they give, she works at a hospital and they give the candy to a lot of the kids there. And I think that was what was my final thought was going to be is that I was really touched today when I found out that, the San Antonio SWAT team dressed up, in superhero outfits. And went to the children's hospital there. And
they're all the rage this Halloween.
They're all the rage, as you know. But they like kind of like, they roped down and like, you know, kind of hung on the, you know, on the glass for the kids and then came in and took pictures with them. And I just was like, you know, that's the stuff we don't talk about at Halloween. It's just like, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's a lot for the kids. And I thought it was kind of great. And, you know, talking with a lot of people at work and stuff and how they were excited for their kids. And that was the aspect that I was like, I was really happy about, was like, wow, look at all these families getting to do a bunch of great things on a holiday that I'm not really, you know, that big a fan of, but you know, I can celebrate it through others and enjoy it as well. And as
Spider-Man, yes, we can enjoy this holiday season. You'll marvel at these incredible costumes and these incredible people bringing joy to these children across the San Antonio area. This has been Jay Ledbetter for In Session Fashion.
Oh, my God. You are incorrigible. Anyway, I will say this, that I want to thank everybody again, that, you know, especially Brendan, yourself, JD, everyone on our writing staff for doing a great job while I was gone. Obviously, you know, I wasn't gone too long, but the vacation was much needed. We had such a blast down there. Yes, as I think JD said, and as you guys said last week, I did win casino night. I won some earnings, and I won a very fancy sombrero that I sent pictures of to you guys that hopefully Jay never uses against me. No, they weren't that bad. It was just, I will just encourage everyone out there to, I know it gets busy in the world and we have to see a lot of movies and we're just running all the time, but to slow down, take a break, go on a vacation and really enjoy my anniversary/honeymoon with my wife was so great and so fantastic. And it rejuvenated me in such a way that I was able to, you know, come back now and do the second half of the year and be really excited about where we're going to go and what we're going to see. So, I just take a vacation, you know, and now, and don't just do it to go see like in-laws or family during the holidays or whatever it may be. Just take a vacation with the people that you like, people that you love. And just recharge the batteries every now and then, because it works wonders. And with that, that's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you guys next week.